Welcome to another episode of Digitally Diverse, a podcast where we do a deep dive into the careers and journeys of influential tech and design leaders. Today we are joined by Ash Ivory, and they are a head of product at Askable. Thank you so much for joining us, Ash.
Thanks for having me, Ellen.
Thank you. So I, and probably our listeners as well, would love to have a bit of background as to what your journey so far has looked like and how you got to where you're at Askable at the moment. Can you fill us in?
Look, I'll do my best to keep the answer short because that's a pretty loaded question and quite a long one. But my journey into product and tech has a really winding intro, so maybe we'll cover that in some later questions. But right now, I'm head of product at Askable, which means I essentially run our development team, our design team, and our product function all in one. So it was really important for us at Askable when we were establishing this function to kind of have everyone in together. And yeah, I've been on this journey with Askable for about 2 years. They've been going for a lot longer than that. But yeah, I'm quite new here. And when I arrived, there was just myself and one of our founding devs. And at the moment, we're up to 12 in product now, which is really exciting, and still lots of plans to grow.
Amazing. And for those that don't know, obviously you guys are, you know, still in like that startup phase, which is super exciting. But can you tell me a little bit more about what you guys do?
Yeah, good question. Probably should have covered that as well. But, you know, the team structure is always the more exciting part, I think. So we are a software platform. We started out providing participants to a lot of brands and I guess really consumer-facing brands who wanted to do a lot of discovery interviews and really kind of dig in with participants. But one thing that we found is that it was quite tough for those companies or those orgs to really get clear on who they wanted to talk to and then actually get connected with those people as well. And I think a really cool part of Askable is that we were actually born out of an agency. So it was an agency called Orange Digital, which spent a lot of time in, I guess, innovation as well, and really gave their team at the time a lot of space to explore new opportunities. This came up as a really cool opportunity. A lot of their clients were looking for it. And yeah, it's kind of evolved to a fully fledged UX research platform today, where we not only have the recruitment side of things with participants, but we've also built a nice suite of tools that complement our researchers when they're running their research and going through that process as well. So we've got our own version of video conferencing and a whole range of tools inside the platform that support those interviews and how basically the researchers extract the insights. So our vision or mission is to help accelerate product improvement around the world, but how it really manifests day to day for us in the product is that we're supporting people to have really great conversations with their customers and extract really cool insights so that they can take those and make their products or services better.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fantastic. Like, I am a very big advocate for good UX research and customer research. So any way that can allow that to be done more efficiently and just a better quality of research and findings is always going to be a good thing and have great results for people who are trying to build some cool stuff. So yeah, that's awesome. And I know that you've recently expanded to outside of Australia. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, we have a really exciting part of our journey now. So we are self-funded, which we're really, really proud of. So taking on a new location or expanding overseas is always, you know, quite a well thought through step. So we're in London at the moment, which is really exciting. So we've got, I think there's 5 on the ground there now. So lots of customer support, sales, growth, and we're really getting into the community and meeting lots of amazing UX researchers, product people, and getting to know, you know, the UK client base over there. It's been awesome. I've done this kind of process before with Outfit, a previous startup I worked for. So it's a really friendly market to enter into. They look and sound quite similar to us, which is really cool. And a lot of the brands sort of look to us and we look to them. So that's been a really great step. We've obviously been getting in front of lots of people and chatting, which has been awesome. And then we are also looking at the States, looking a little bit later down the track for that. That's a really, really big move. So our founder has gone over, John, and he's, you know, been exploring the different areas that we might open up over there. So yeah, everything's really about expansion at the moment. It's a super exciting time to be a part of the team.
I love that. Oh, that's super exciting, especially startups have those like big, lofty, meaty goals. And you're actually putting in the hard yards to try and figure out how to make that work. So yeah, super exciting. You speak so well. Very eloquent. You. Like everything, no ums and ahs and pauses. It's just very like, yeah, it's good. Have you done like training on like public speaking or something, or are you just know your stuff now?
Weird story, and it might actually be a good one.
Ooh.
When I started, I'm trying to think what year it was, it would have been about 2011, and I was studying marketing. I had done my graphic design course and I sort of jumped into roles where I was working alongside a lot of marketing teams, knew graphic design really well, but I wanted to expand my knowledge around marketing. At that point, I realized that designers and marketers are two sides of the same coin. And I thought, I really need to learn more about this marketing side. If I don't, I'm really not going to deliver on what, you know, my team or adjacent teams are asking me for. So I went and studied marketing, and my lecturer, her name was Georgia, and she was fantastic. So I'm actually from North Queensland. I was born in a little place called Moranbah. It's a tiny little mining town. And then I grew up in Mission Beach, which is a beautiful place. It's up near Cairns. It's just stunning, really tight-knit, awesome community. But if you met me probably 20 years ago, I would have dropped a lot of my G's and there would have been, you know, a little bit more of a twang in my voice. And I remember the first day I got into class with Georgia. So, you know, typical TAFE room, computers, we're studying after hours. So Georgia comes in, we start getting to know each other, answering questions. And I was dropping a lot of my G's and she said, we're going to work on that. And it's something that I've been trying to work on since then. And I guess speaking for me is something I do a lot. It's a really core part of, you know, whether I'm trying to communicate with the team internally about something or whether I get awesome opportunities like this to sort of tell my story. I really wanted to be meaningful when I was speaking. So Yeah, big kudos to Georgia, my TAFE teacher, who really helped me craft my sentences and try and not drop as many as of my G's as I was.
I feel like there's so many people who would be in the exact same boat, including myself. Like I grew up in Newcastle. I mean, I feel like it's not as bad of a reputation. Like it doesn't live up to its like working class reputation anymore. It's a lot better now. But when I first got to London, I didn't think I had a super thick accent. And so many people were like, what did you say? Like, what? And I didn't realize how much was slang as well. So all these people would just be laughing at me because of all the things I was saying. And I'm like, can you understand me? I'm sorry. But yeah, it's really interesting. Like when you have to communicate with such a wider group of people, you do have to like tone things down a little bit, slow it down, be a little bit more aware of how you're sounding.
Exactly. And then as soon as we start talking about it, we're even more hyper aware, and then we fall into all the traps that we're trying not to fall into.
Definitely. Is there any like specific projects or anything you'd like to mention that are coming up?
There's a few things that we're working on that we're quite excited about. I think one of those is, I guess, there's a lot of hype at the moment around AI and ChatGPT and all of, you know, that crazy space. And so we got very excited about it as well, but it was probably more from the perspective that it was solving a big problem for us technically that we were about to embark on. So with our sessions tool, which is our video tool, we were looking at adding things like transcription. We wanted to do things like, you know, personal redaction, all of that really important privacy stuff as well for both our participants and our brands that, you know, conduct their research through our platform. So we had all these really big meaty challenges around that particular product, and AI and OpenAI especially just burst onto the scene at the right time. It's been really, really interesting to see the way a lot of other platforms have just picked something up and jumped at that opportunity quite quickly. And I think that's been a great approach to allow users, all user types, right, and all experience levels with AI just start and start to understand what the, you know, what it can actually do and how powerful it can be with current platforms. But we took a little bit more time to consider how we wanted to implement it, and we've got a really great approach now with a lot of the tech that we've built foundationally for sessions. Adding things like transcription on top of that has just been a huge springboard into the, all of these amazing opportunities of, you know, AI being able to help summarize insights and speed up that analysis and synthesis process. So we are only just really scratching the surface of where we can get to with that. But I would say for us, the next 12 months is really about getting the most out of, you know, those approaches, as well as building to that view that we have of allowing research teams to do more with what they've got and the research that they're conducting.
Yeah, to me sounds like you guys are just being able to make good research accessible to anyone, really. Like, gone are the days now where you had to have one or two in-house researchers, or you had to outsource to a to an agency who provides that service. Now it sounds like you can just utilize the AI that you guys are offering and you're good to go.
For sure, there's that side of things. So really building quite purpose-built tools for that audience, but I guess educating the market on another one of our, it's kind of a feature, it's bit of a service, you know, it's really robust offering that we're quite excited about. But Askable Plus is another layer on top of those tools, which means if research teams are lean, or if product teams are lean, or if companies have never thought about research but they know it's something that they really want to invest in, our Plus platform allows you to be matched with a researcher who can conduct that research on your behalf. You brief them, you know, you guide them, and then they go away, do all the heavy lifting through, you know, our platform and obviously their experience as well. And then you're able to come back and, you know, connect back in with them. They present the report and the findings, and it's amazing. So there's a few, you know, moving parts that we're bringing together, not just with tech, but also really experienced researchers out there who are really keen on, you know, changing the way they work a little bit. And it's pretty cool. A lot of our researchers are working with brands that they've always wanted to, and they've got that opportunity to do that now through Plus.
Yeah, no, that's great. Because, yeah, you're right. There's definitely still some projects and clients who need, you know, that human touch. And I don't think that is ever really going to go away. But I guess, kind of like touching on that, could you tell me a little bit more about like what the culture is like working with you guys? Obviously, you're a small team at the moment, but how do you see that culture as you all grow?
It's a really interesting question. When I joined Askable, the size of Askable is about the size that just the product team alone is now. So we've gone through a huge growth phase, but we're still not at that really, really significant point where a lot of companies start to feel that their culture breaks down. And so we're in a position where we can really be aware of what potentially could be coming with growth and expansion. It's just one of those things that you can't really avoid. And I think every company is different. You can try to anticipate, you know, different things that may need to change, or, you know, listen to others' experience. But ultimately, I think every company has their own path as they grow. Mm-hmm. But for us, culture, it really is one of the things that I picked up on quite early through even my interview process. And I had a slightly different one to, you know, what we do today, but such is the growth journey. I think one of the biggest cornerstones of our culture, which is, you know, quite talked about at the moment, is we're fully in the office. We don't really do remote work. We have a team of 36 roughly now, and obviously some of those are in London, but the majority are here in Brizzy, and we're all in the office. It's not that we're against people working from home, but we felt that a point of difference or an advantage for us was to really get our team in the same space, connect in, share ideas. Collaboration is really, really key to the way that we build product. So having the team in the office, you know, we joke about that part of your day when you are fully remote, when you need to ask a very, you know, simple 30-second question and the preamble either side on a Zoom call, and the monotony of setting up a link and, you know, sort of going through that process can be a little bit intense. So we do see a lot of advantages with our in-office culture there. Mm-hmm. The way that we've tried to build in, I guess, flexibility and sort of the other side of it with work-life balance is we have a askable bonus day once a month, which is really cool. So it's a day where the whole office just takes a break together. It's normally a Friday or a Thursday or a Monday or a Tuesday if it's either side of a public holiday. And we all just take a break the same day. We see it as a way for you to, you know, go do your life admin or just chill out. And there's not that pressure of, oh my God, I'm off, but, you know, Slack's just filling up and piling up with requests and things like that. So for us, that's a big part of, you know, giving back to the staff that way. They're extremely committed and they come into the office. So it's only fair that there's some balance. We also have quite a beautiful office. We're very, very lucky that our founder, John, took a lot of time to design the space and really think about, you know, what it would be like to work in the office. It's probably one of the biggest compliments I think we get anytime we bring someone through. They kind of feel
like... Yeah, even just like, behind you, it looks lovely out there. What a lovely view, yeah.
This is just a window, right? But yeah, it really is beautiful. And that's just kind of, I guess, the logistics of working here is, you know, in office, really strong on collaboration, that type of thing. But then there's a whole raft of cultural parts that are far more ubiquitous that have just been here from the start and have been really cultivated by the leaders. We're quite particular about who we bring in to Askable. We know that we're at that phase where one person still can really influence the culture. So our interviewing process, you know, our values, all of that really stacks up to what I think is quite unique in terms of hiring and culture. And it can be quite challenging as a leader to adhere to, you know, the high bar that we set. Especially when hiring is a little bit tough. You know, the market's been changing quite significantly over the last few years. So it's been interesting to go through those peaks and troughs. And sometimes there is an abundance of talent, and other times, you know, talent is a little bit more lean, and you've really got to stay pretty consistent with the way you've been hiring, regardless of, you know, what those external factors that are happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's great. And I think it's a really refreshing way to look at, you know, if you are expecting, you know, people to be in face-to-face, how do you make that an engaging and rewarding experience for your employees? And that in turn is just going to allow them to do their best work. And I think as well, if the culture is on point, people are going to want to come in and spend time with their colleagues and really get amongst the problems. And yeah, no, that's fantastic. I'd love to hear a little bit more backstory on like your journey and how you got to where you're at. What was like your higher education and like your tertiary education getting into tech?
Oh my goodness. Good question, Ellen. The short answer is there was none. The long answer is when I went through high school, it was still OP. We were sort of on the older system in Queensland. So I had my choices. I enrolled in fine art at JCU, James Cook University. So that was sort of the uni that was quite close to me. And at the time I was really hoping that I could stay around family, friends, but, you know, Townsville was a bit of a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And that was just sort of at the end of my year 12 year, right? So wrapping up high school, doing all that fun stuff. And I, in that little window, found out my mum had lung cancer, and that just kind of completely hit me for six, hit the family for six. And it really, really changed my path quite significantly. So I went and spent obviously a lot of time with mum. She passed away about 6 months after I graduated. So it was a really, really quick diagnosis, but I was really thankful to have the opportunity to, you know, just be able to defer, take stock of where I wanted to go and spend sort of those last few months with mum. And from there, it was then a really interesting journey. I just kind of went back to friends, family. I took the pressure off myself to make a choice, and, you know, I just sort of lived, and a lot of time to recuperate, I guess, and just take stock of what was going on and where I wanted to go. And I eventually moved to Brisbane. And when I got down here, I had started in that little gap. I had a little job at a sticker place, like a sticker and sign kind of place, where I was literally, you know, installing vehicle wraps and things like that, and just kind of doing fun but quite low pressure work. Mm-hmm. So I'd done a little bit of desktop publishing, I think it was called back then as well, which I'm starting to show my age on things like this. But did desktop publishing, enjoyed it, wanted to continue to build on it. Came down here. I studied at Shillington, which was a private college, and that felt more my pace. So it was like a Monday to Friday. I basically came into the studio. It operated very much like a real studio environment. And one thing that they really emphasized was the ability to really work sort of to the timeframes that the industry was expecting. And strangely enough, a lot of my peers in Shillington with me were a lot of uni grads who were going through the course to learn how to basically speed up their process and their workflow. So yeah, I studied graphic design, loved it. Like I discussed before, studied marketing and really enjoyed that as well. It gave me a really solid grounding in, you know, just business principles. It was the first time I had really been exposed to that type of thinking. That was great. Loved marketing, loved design, and just kind of stuck around roles like that for quite a while. And I was being put in these positions where I could kind of do a bit of both. So they were getting a twofer. They were getting a marketer and a designer in one, which in some ways was fantastic. It gave me an edge, but in others it meant I was really, really overworked and overloaded. And I was working in a lot of franchise organizations. I just sort of stumbled my way into that world. And so a lot of the time with franchise, you've got a central marketing team that's basically servicing every franchisee out in market. And that was a big, big problem for me in a lot of roles that I went into. And I remember one day I was starting to kind of Google some solutions, and I was thinking, goodness, there must be a way for me to solve this. There must be a better way than just, you know, banging out artwork and making small changes over and over. And I stumbled on this product called Outfit, and I really, really wanted to buy it and bring it into the business I was in at the time. And that didn't quite go to plan, but that was sort of the start of my tech journey. So I went home after having that conversation with a few of the team at the place I was at before Outfit, and I remember saying to my now wife at the time, I really get this product. I get why this is completely going to change, you know, a lot of organizations' workflows and outputs when it comes to marketing materials. And so I decided to message the founder, Bruce, and I just hounded him for weeks and said, you really, really, really need to get me in. I'm going to change your business. I really get this kind of buyer persona. Please just, you know, give me a little bit of time. And he did. And the rest is really history from there. So that was my entry point into tech, but I had no idea where I was about to go or what was coming from that point. But yeah, it really started because I understood the pain point that the software was solving, and that's really what got me in and got me hooked on software.
Yeah, it's such a common tale to hear someone who starts off in, you know, the finer art side of things and then or in the marketing side of things and then make their way into product. But you kind of had a double whammy, like a background in both, which is, yeah, I think it's so handy to have that foundation. Obviously, you need to have a creative brain, but like being able to pair it with the marketing and the business side of things is super important. I guess I'd love to know, would you recommend that journey to like perhaps students or younger people who are thinking about getting into tech and a product? Would a similar journey, would you recommend that, or would you recommend like a course, or how do you see it going?
I mean a lot of those things will work for a lot of different people in a bunch of different ways. So I think what's more important when it comes to thinking about your career and where you want to go, especially in the early years where you really have a lot of flexibility, you probably don't have a lot tying you down. You may not have a house, kids, you may not really, you know, care about where you're living in 12 months as well. So I think using that early stage in your career to explore a lot, to work out what you're passionate about, what areas do you really want to learn more about that you may not be, you know, in a position to do that day to day in your job, sort of investing in those different areas and starting to carve out paths for yourself, I think is more important than thinking about, do I need to study this to get to that, you know, entry level role that will help me ladder up this way. I think keeping your eyes and ears open when you're looking at things that interest you, when you're thinking about how you respond to certain topics, interests, those types of things. I think getting an understanding of yourself and how your natural skill set is really going to, you know, help you stand out in roles or positions or whatever later on in the future, and then working out, okay, what else might I want to add to my skill set and round out, and then being really practical and logical about, am I the type of person that can sit down and study and go through that process, or do I need to learn more through a hands-on, you know, version of that? I think understanding that as early as possible is really important, especially because you need to learn, you know, your whole career. So for me, I didn't know it at the time, but I very much found a course that fit the way that I wanted to learn. And I've recently been diagnosed with ADHD, and it's this really strange thing. It's something I've been hearing a lot of these adults, there's something in the water or something's going on, and we're all suddenly, you know, we're having these epiphanies of, maybe that's why my report card said, you know, I was a little bit distractible, or, you know, whatever it was. But I'm putting those pieces together now, but, you know, in hindsight, looking back at why I may have chosen a shorter course over uni, you know, it's all starting to make sense now. But just naturally, I wanted to learn through doing. And so I tried to find courses and materials that were going to, you know, really fit with the way I wanted to learn, rather than a whole uni degree. There are now, I think, a lot of topics that I would love to go and learn quite deeply at university, but it's certainly not anything to do with my day to day. It would just be, you know, a passion project to really sort of dive into.
Yeah, a labor of love, so to speak.
Totally.
Well, yeah, I think that's so important as well, knowing your own like learning style, because yeah, you're right. Everyone's different, right? Everyone should have like a bit of a preference between like a four-year degree. That's a big undertaking. That's a lot of focus. It's also a lot of money. Like, or you could get in there and do like a 8-week intensive General Assembly course and be just as well off. So yeah, I think it's important to figure out what you're actually wanting to get out of whatever you choose to do, and what how it lines up to how your brain works, I think is super important too.
Totally.
But I'd love to kind of just hear, it sounds like you've got lots of passion about product and helping users and helping companies understand users and customers. But like, what else lights you up and motivates you to be doing what you're doing at Askable at the moment?
It's a really good question. I realized quite early in my career, whether that was, you know, really early on when I was designing, or whether it's, you know, more recently where I'm sort of helping build the team here and also helping a lot of the emerging leaders at Askable as well. People are this part of, I guess, my thinking, my interests that really drive a lot of my choices. And with Askable, there is this completely different approach to, I guess, the way that people communicate, the way that we speak quite openly about our goals, accountability, and, you know, all of those, I guess, core values around what makes us us. And that really aligned with me. And for me, that is the other part of the whole equation. You know, obviously I love design. I love, you know, elegant, beautiful solutions, but ultimately people are the other side of all of that. And so helping the team really develop their own skill sets, their, you know, hit their goals, whether that's career orientated or whether it's, you know, personal as well. For me, people are the really, really key part of why I get out of bed. And one of my big mantras, I guess, is I need to be building a team that is way smarter and way better than me. And if I'm doing that, and if I feel like, you know, that's the general, I guess, consensus of myself as a leader and what's going on around me, then I'm really doing my job. So yeah, people nurturing and supporting, you know, really having, I guess, that servant leadership mentality is a really part of what makes my day awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic to know that like those values are not only going to take you from like just your day-to-day life, but like in your work life as well. I would like to hear, if have you had any speed bumps during your journey, and like how have they shaped how your career's turned out?
Definitely there have been many. I think one of the ones that stands out quite a lot, and not necessarily in chronological order, but in the last few months of being at Outfit, I definitely experienced burnout, like quite significant burnout. And that was a big speed bump for me, because it wasn't something that I was really totally aware of at the time, but it's almost a little bit like that old adage of, you know, boiling a frog, and it kind of happens slowly and you don't really understand what's happening until you realize, oh my God, I'm pretty much, I need to get out of this space because it's bad.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that the culture or environment was necessarily the key contributor as well. There was a number of things going on there, but burnout for me took me by surprise quite a lot. And the other thing that really took me by surprise with burnout, once I realized that it was happening and I needed to take a break, was just how long it took me to recover, reset, you know, get my confidence back as a leader. It was quite a significant period and it lasted far longer than I thought. So that was a really big speed bump, especially going into software and kind of changing careers and I guess roles and really changing my career trajectory at the time was a really good decision. But inevitably, I put a lot of pressure on myself and that showing up as burnout wasn't something that I really prepared for or honestly really understood the concept of. So yeah. that was a big one. I think another potential speed bump maybe, or just something that I didn't realize I was going to have to deal with as often as I have, is probably around gender and how I show up in the workplace and that sort of tolerance piece and knowing how to navigate that and starting to form my own opinions on it and stances on it has been quite interesting as well. And I'd probably say that is a constant speed bump along the way all the time. It's sort of, it never goes away, but that's just another one of those facts of life, facts of, you know, who I am and how I sort of show up at work that's been pretty ongoing. Other than that, I probably haven't had any other big, big significant things in my career that I would say is, you know, anything really worth calling out at this point, other than, you know, mum passing away quite young. That was a little bit of a life speed bump, but in saying that, it's not directly related to my role or professional life. But yeah, they're the you know, that's the short list of speed bumps.
The main ones. Yeah. And that's really interesting that you called out burnout. It's something that, you know, I really like asking that question to people who come on for a chat, because everyone has speed bumps and I don't want to, you can't really gloss over the fact anymore because everyone's got something going on. And I think the more that we highlight that and normalize it, it's better for everyone. And burnout comes up so often. And even with people outside of, you know, tech or at any job, you can get burnout. How did it turn out for you? Like, was there any like major symptoms or were you just like ready to tap out one day?
it's a good question. I think so. I'm absolutely a realist. I'm not someone that sugarcoats things, but I like to have a healthy balance of, you know, the reality of the situation and then also, okay, what are we going to do about it? You know, how are we just going to kind of set our mind to it, or what's in our control that we can, you know, influence and I guess move a situation forward with. For me, when I started really struggling to see the next step or get motivated to solve problems that in the past I would have run at, you know, or been quite energized by, I could feel that I didn't have the resilience to get up and kind of go again when, you know, you sort of go through a bit of a stumble, or, you know, there's challenges everywhere every day, and those are small and big. And I think when I was not able to get up again and solve problems or, you know, even chase opportunities that were put in front of me, that's when I knew something was up. I became, yeah, quite sort of withdrawn. I knew that there were key meetings that I really loved to go to that I just was quite apathetic towards. So I think for me, it really kind of showed up in that withdrawal. And people know me. They know that I'm quite open. I generally wear my heart on my sleeve. And that then, I think, definitely triggered in a lot of other people's minds as well, who were, you know, working closely with me or friends and family around me. They could really see that something was up. And it sort of happened slowly and then all at once. And I knew that it was time to stop, you know, self-assess and work out what the next thing was. But I knew I absolutely couldn't continue to do what I was doing at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to have that, like, that moment of realization is sometimes like quite scary. I know for me that whenever I start to feel a little bit that way, the denial creeps in. I'm like, no, just keep going, it's fine, everything's fine. That moment of realization is like, oh no, we need to sit still for a second here and like, yes, reflect and see what the next step is, because if you just keep on pushing it, it just is going to make it worse. So yeah, kudos to you for, you know, recognizing it and just pressing pause. I feel like sometimes just taking a break, it sounds so self-helpy, but just take a break and then figure out where you want to go from that point. And also, you mentioned before how you're showing up at work around gender, and how do you find being in a position of leadership? How have you stood in that role, and how has your experiences around that impacted how you show up as a leader?
It's over my career, I think it's been quite wide and varied. So very early on, like I came out when I was about 13, so I was quite young. I think it was definitely no surprise to a lot of people around me, but in my mind it was like the biggest announcement that I'd ever made and no one knew. And it's actually quite crazy how many people knew and they were fine, and I was just so in my head about it. But yeah, at the time I didn't really have language around this, and it's something that I talk to my wife about quite regularly now as well. So I have two stepkids. Jen had Charlotte and Aiden in a previous marriage, and they are growing up in a completely different world to what I grew up in, you know. And so that for me is kind of where my foundation started with identity and gender and sexuality. And I was quite ashamed for many, many years when I started, you know, getting into the workforce. It was something that I certainly kept at home. They were pretty, you know, casual roles when you're young and you're working out, you know, how to make some money. But I definitely kept my relationships and my sexuality, you know, behind closed doors. I felt that that's what I needed to do. Growing up in a small town didn't impact me in a negative way. It was quite good. We had a really close-knit community. I had a lot of really great teachers around me that supported me that way, but it almost forced me into this frame of mind where I thought, I'm never going to have that community or that safety around me again, so I should really kind of keep this stuff, you know, close to my chest. And because the community was so safe, when I would kind of, you know, when we would go on school trips or I would go places with my family, you know, if we travel to visit family or friends, I really noticed the difference at that age. And that, I think, set me up to be quite hesitant early on. And everything quite early in my career reinforced a lot of those negative experiences. I think one of my first jobs out of sort of study, so once I'd finished my graphic design, and I was moving into my first position, we had to wear uniform, and it was a very gendered uniform. The women wore skirts, the men wore pants, and it just absolutely just eroded my self-confidence, my, you know, sense of self. And I struggled a lot because I couldn't get the courage up to speak to, you know, my manager or our CEO about how I actually wanted to represent myself. And it was quite a learning curve over the years to work out how to speak up and have that voice in my head saying, it's important that the people around you, you know, and where you work wholeheartedly support you, believe in you, back you. And I also, after that sort of early experience with not knowing how to talk about uniforms and things like that, I had a good run in terms of most workplaces were okay, but I entered one that was, I didn't understand the full context of the owner and, you know, sort of those values. And I remember in my final interview, one of the team said to me, you know, maybe Ash, just tone down, you know, your relationship and your sexuality. At that point, I was starting to be a little bit more open in interviews. I thought this is a better way to approach it so that they're able to kind of make that judgment. And in a really strange way, it kind of backfired on me because they were aware of, you know, who I was. But, yeah, it kind of then forced me into this conversation of, okay, keep that part at home, even though you've acknowledged it and you've been quite open with it. We'd prefer you kind of keep that behind closed doors as well. And that was a big turning point for me when I realized that that was something that I'd allowed to happen. I should probably get out, and I never want to sort of be in a workplace like that ever again. And from that moment, I was quite adamant about being out, being open and honest. And not only being open and honest, but being quite vocal about who I was as a leader and really making sure that I was, you know, using my voice where I could to encourage the right conversations in the workplace. So I've had various experiences where I've been really uncomfortable, and I really want to make sure that in Askable and anywhere else I'm able to, that I'm really emphasizing openness. But one area that I obviously know a lot about is, you know, sexuality and gender. So I'm definitely far more open and honest and more of an advocate in that space than I was when I first started my career.
Yeah, what an amazing evolution of how you show up and your views on it. It's really inspiring, honestly, because in a time where, like when I first started in the design space, leadership was just primarily a lot of men, and we're seeing a time now where a lot of designers, especially, it's pretty 50-50 people getting into the industry, which is really great to see. But in leadership positions, it's still quite leaning more towards the male side of things. And to like have that representation of women and people that are gender diverse in leadership roles and bringing diverse thoughts and perspectives and views into, you know, some pretty influential products, I think is only going to be a good thing. So yeah, thank you for sharing that, because I really appreciate that. For a lot of people, it's, you know, it can be a super touchy subject, so I'm really grateful that you're able to share that.
No, I appreciate it, Alan. And it's a good point about, you know, not just myself and my career, but product as well, because, you know, we have this really amazing part of our product where we get to talk about this really tangibly. And that's in things like our demographic filters and, you know, our participants' kind of information. That's a really big part of what our researchers are looking for, because we want to make sure that, you know, diversity is very much at the forefront of what they're thinking about when they're choosing the audience that they want to talk to. And so I guess thankful part of me when we're having those conversations as a product team where, you know, I can all of a sudden see that my pronouns are in, you know, our simple screener questions. And that just completely blows my mind. And it goes back to that, you know, the part of the conversation that I mentioned around, you know, the language that I think young people have today versus what I had. And it's a bit crazy to think when I was growing up, you know, there was no spectrum for gender. It was, you know, you're in the boys' line or the girls' line, and that's about all there is to it. And so I knew that I didn't fit into just one of those. That, you know, for me, it was how I wanted to express myself, you know, and how I wanted to show up, but I didn't have that language. And so it's really exciting that we're having all these conversations. You know, the kids come home now and they have just so much conversation and so many initiatives at school and all of these amazing little, you know, just bits and pieces that the student body does just because they know it's, you know, the right thing to do now. And it just completely blows my mind. And I'm really thankful that I'm in a position now where I can make sure, you know, a lot of that conversation is being fed through into our product in a really tangible way, and people can kind of find themselves, you know, in our screen of questions and things like that. It's as simple as that, but it actually goes a really long way, I think, for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. It's, yeah, you're doing some really important work, and you know, it's you're right, it's so rewarding when you actually do see the few changes, you know, and they kind of hit you when you least expect it, right? It's like, oh, well, that's nice. I'd never noticed that before. Have they recently changed that? And I'd love to hear, like, are there any like media or content that you like to absorb, like any podcasts or any other podcasts or books or, you know, thought leaders around design that you love to absorb?
Oh my God. I'm a bit of a podcast / audiobook / content fiend. So my morning commute, I ride a motorcycle to and from work, and I have about 40 minutes on the bike sort of each way. And so I have a whole lot of time to really get my hands into this stuff. So a couple that I listen to religiously is Lenny's podcast. So he started Lenny's newsletter. He's quite a well-known sort of product mind, and I listen to that one every single week. Mm-hmm. At the moment in our, so I started a book club initiative at Arschool, which is super fun. So we're reading Continuous Discovery Habits together, Teresa Torres. It's not a super new, I guess, framework, but the way that she presents it and the backing that she's got from people like Marty Kagan as product leaders is pretty awesome. So we're reading that at the moment. We also read Atomic Habits, very popular book, but one that I would say is popular for the right reasons. It definitely marries together a bunch of just, you know, productivity hacks and things like that that have been really handy for our whole team. I am a big just scroller of Product Hunt. I think one thing I really try and do in my role is just see what new products are out there, you know, looking at new patterns, new ways of working, all of that type of thing is super fascinating to me. Along the same lines of, I guess, reading and podcasts, there's another app that I'm a little bit obsessed with at the moment called Amy. So it's a new calendar app, and I've been using that quite a lot, and that's really helped with sort of the productivity and, I guess, all of those hacks. It's a really great app to put in place. So that's one that I recommend a lot.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then look, I'm big into, like I said, audiobooks as well. I've got a pretty long list of ones that I've gotten through in the last 12 months. Build, What Everybody Is Saying, that's a really interesting one about body language. I'm happy to provide a list at the end, Ellen, otherwise we'll burn too much time just talking about audiobooks.
It's super interesting to hear. It seems like people that I chat with are either in one of two camps, one of which is that they just read everything, are on a whole bunch of forums, like are amongst everything product and tech, and or they're in the completely opposite side of the spectrum where they have like a pretty clean break between work stuff at work, home life, and like fun other stuff at home. So it's really interesting to see that there's not too many people that are right in the middle. Definitely sounds like you're in camp A, which is great. Obviously, it's, you know, if you're interested in something and are super passionate about it, you just want to absorb all of the information. So no, that's awesome. And do you have like any mentors or like business leaders that inspire you? Or
so I do. I have a pretty consistent mentor that I work with here in Brizzy. His name's Peter Laurie. He's amazing. We have a fairly informal sort of mentor-mentee relationship where you know, if I need him, he's on the phone with me. And I think that's what a good mentor is like. I also have quite a number of people that I like to read about, you know, and follow along with. Lenny is one of them from Lenny's podcast. So Lenny Richowski, he's pretty phenomenal. I think he's got a really amazing story. Recently, I've been just doing a lot of reading about Beyonce as well, which is a little bit left of field, but I think there's this really interesting part of people who are quite successful, you know, in their different areas. And I really love just reading about people's journeys and their approaches. And I think especially with leadership and people who are quite successful at insane level, you can kind of find patterns and trends and try and understand fundamentally, you know, what is it about that person or their approach that has helped them succeed. The music industry is insanely competitive. So if you can sort of have a look at why people have succeeded or what's, you know, what's manifested in their lives to get them to a point where they've been able to take advantage of opportunities, I'm pretty obsessed with those types of stories. I'm a very proud Taylor Swift fan, and not just for the music. I think she's a brilliant case study on brand and, you know, audience engagement, you name it. She's, you know, she's done it. She's a fantastic kind of case study in so many different areas like that as well. So I have a very eclectic, I guess, resource collection, you know, that I like to look at and draw from. So I'm quite lucky on that side that I have really, I guess, diverse interests. And then really strangely, my other sort of mentor and I guess person that I look to is our founder, John. He's incredible. He's a great leader and, you know, not just as a CEO, but also as quite a, you know, personal friend. So for me, that relationship is really important as well from a mentoring perspective.
No, that's great. I think the more diverse, the better, because then you just get a bit of a different flavor from everything, right? So you're able to draw on different things from different people and different perspectives. Thank you so much for coming on today. Really enjoyed having a chat. I feel like we could have gone on for a lot longer. But yeah, thank you for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me, Ellen. It's been amazing to chat.
Thanks.